Carter, I think, played about what he's normally been playing. Jared Harris played some, I think. And so, but like my read of the situation was that was very, very much intentional. That would not have been the case necessarily. I mean, my biggest issue is not that Penny wants to play more guys. It's the situational aspect of it. Like, I feel like it just seems to always happen this way that, you know, he starts subbing within the first 10 minutes of the first half. And even if things are going well, the substitutions start and then it seems to inevitably tail off a little bit, like sooner than you'd like it to. You know, I think that this is a very, very smart decision to, instead of PJ Haggerty averaging 36 minutes a game, like maybe 33 minutes a game for PJ Haggerty and maybe 32 minutes a game for Tyrese Hunter instead of 35. Yeah, no, I think that's really, really smart. I just, you know, you'd like to see it worked more into the flow of the game and maybe not be so intentional about, maybe it shouldn't feel quite so intentional. Maybe it should feel more natural. And you know, hopefully that, if you did it that way, hopefully that would alleviate some of the ebbs and flows, some of the drastic ebbs and flows that almost cost them against East Carolina the other day.
Yeah, the way I've said it is, I'm fine if they want to earn their rest, and you go and you put them away and, you know, let other guys work in the last 10 minutes of a second half. Like, I'm cool with that. But then there's also kind of like the flip side. It's like, hey, man, they were up like 30 on FAU. There was no need for Tyrese and PJ to play 38 minutes that game. Like, you know, you can work it in that way. That's kind of where I understand the idea of you don't want to wear guys out and you want to give them. But it's like, I think there's better ways of doing that rather than just like forcing worse players on the floor when the game's not decided.
Yes, that is, I think, the next step is, of course you can't play everybody all 20 minutes of the first half, but like, you know, Baraka Okoji a couple minutes here, PJ Carter a couple minutes there, Dante Harris a few minutes here, but then, you know, don't sell out on the large scale substitutions until you get, you know, till you're up 20 with like 15 minutes left in the game, 13 minutes left in the game, something like that. Then you can let it fly. But we'll see. I mean, you know, they're 13-3. We're nitpicking at this point,
for
feels
sure.
Like. But yeah, big one, another big one. It's if nothing changes, which we all know it can, it'll be the last quad two opportunity on the schedule now that Temple is, I think, 120 in the net. So, yeah, last quad two opportunity of the season if it holds the way it is now.
All right, Munz, safe travels and happy music hunting.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. I appreciate it.
That is Jason Munz, of course, Tiger basketball beat writer for The Commercial Appeal. You can go read his work over at thecommercialappeal.com. We haven't even gotten into the Grizzlies over the weekend. Also got to get to more from the NFL. We'll do that during the list. Also, Grizzlies-Rockets tonight on the road, 6:30 for pregame. Tip off with Eric at 7 p.m. We'll discuss that, as well as one more wild card weekend game that we have. We've got Rams and Vikings tonight. We'll do all that during hour number two. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Zen Sports just picked another grand prize winner, this time for the December Big Game Sweepstakes. And now they're rolling out the VIP Players Club Sweepstakes for January. And the prizes are raised to a whole new level. This month, one grand prize winner will win $10,000 bonus cash on an NFL big game bet in February and $10,000 cash, or you can take an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. So you can get a free bet on the big game for $10,000 plus $10,000 cash, or the alternative payout of $15,000 cash. You'll also have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, you can earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And even if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll still also have a shot to win one of five smaller prizes, which will grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game or $250 cash. Also, for new customers, if you sign up using my promo code JeffTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you'll receive 500 additional entries to the entries you earned from the value of the qualifying bet. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules, and you can also earn a $100 no-danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. No danger first wager, limited to plus 500 odds to qualify. Terms and conditions do apply. A qualifying wager for entry must have a minimum odds of any leg in the entry of at least 250, minus 250 or worse. American odds, for clarity, a minus 251 play does not qualify. Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for terms and conditions. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Let's get into the
John Morant.
Yeah, I heard it wasn't exactly a work of art on Saturday night, but we were reminded up in Minneapolis just indeed what you can see when John Morant plays, in which sometimes it's stuff that you've never seen before. The reverse layup or the reverse pivot to the bank shot, that's something we've kind of seen where the Ja will kind of pump, get the guy off his feet, and because Ja, gravity does not affect Ja Morant like it does other human beings, when he's coming down and the guy loses leverage, he'll shoot it over the top of him. We've seen that one. Whatever that floater was at the baseline, honestly, like my first thought when I'm watching it live, Heard, was like, was that a mistake? Did he think someone was going to be there for a lob? And then you realize, like, nah, it was way too high for a lob. It was just like an 8-foot moon ball. And, like, that is the thing that you get with Ja Morant. Even though he has a horrific shooting night to start, when it comes winning time and we get down to the fourth quarter, there's just nobody else you'd rather see with a ball in his hands.
Exactly. I think I was telling you this before we went off air, like, while we was off air, like, well, the shot was his touch or had a little luck or whatever to it. I just feel like great players make great plays. Things, the universe, the basketball guys are on their side because they're that good.
Yes.
And so that was a great game. The reason it was more personal to me, I don't know if I ever told you this, Jeffrey, but like my two favorite players in my dream backcourt for the 2028 Olympics is Ja Morant and Anthony Edwards. That's like my dream. Them are my young backcourt. I have a personal relationship with Ant-Man. Pretty cool with Ja family. But, and so to see them going at it and then Ja hit one of them, like, okay, Ja. Because I feel like they're the two, like, young American stars.
Sure.
That, like,
they feel like they are the, of the Americans, like, under 30 or whatever, I guess 27, whatever. I think they're both probably close to 25, 26.
Yeah, they both, Ja 25, and he's, Anthony Edwards like 23, 22, yeah.
They both feel like they have the highest ceiling of star power.
I on and off the court.
Right.
I totally agree with that. So, no, that shot was awesome. And it show you how good Ja is, and it just show you how good sports is. Like we seen, we was talking about the momentum. Ja was just, to his standard, okay that whole game.
Yep.
And made the two biggest plays to win it. And Anthony Edwards was great the game. He was talking mess and out there, and when it come down to it, he was on a losing end. I'm actually going to that game on it's a week from that. It's on MLK Day.
Yeah, I think it's the Monday game.
Yeah. So that, and I went to it last when they played. So no, it was great. It's great the things John Morant can do.
The other shout out I wanted to give was Brandon Clark for that final possession. That was the most encouraging defensive play I've seen Brandon make, because I've kind of in the back of my head, it's like, I don't know how healthy he is, isn't. Like, clearly he hasn't suffered setbacks, but it's like, after you have the Achilles, what is it? The fact that he was able to switch off, recover, and still make a really good defensive play in which you get the hand in Anthony's face, you get him to getting away from the basket, shooting, falling away, like, that's the type of athleticism that made me feel like, oh, maybe he could find like the same physical form that he had before the injury, because that play was so tough and he made it look easy, honestly.
Like you say, that was hustle, high motor, aggressiveness, smartness, angles, all out resilient. He was resilient on that.
Yes.
And the way he did that is like, it's one of them things where when you're coaching and you're like, what would you do to make sure we win? And to me, that was a prime example of it. And that was just really good.
And then you have effort to take credit for, yeah, I mean, obviously we work on that every day in practice. You know, we work on fighting, you know, fighting off a screen, then recovering on a switch, making sure we get in hand in space. He's been coached to do that. You always got to make sure you take credit.
The coach said that?
No, I always laugh. I always laugh when coaches try to take credit for that. It's like, that was like an individual effort. Like that's like one you can't really teach.
And coaches go over that, Jeff. Oh, yeah. The point is, you still can't put in kids who dedicated to do it. They got to be in them.
All right, here was the other thing, because this was a fascinating game to watch, because when you were watching it in real time, you kept kind of wondering, how are the Grizzlies in this? And then when you maybe did a little box score hunting, you started to realize, like, okay, second chance opportunities, and the Grizzlies took care of the basketball while the Timberwolves didn't. But then there's just the other factor right now. Jaren Jackson gives you 34 minutes, another 33-point performance, 8 rebounds to go along with an assist and a steal. And we have no blocks, actually, shockingly. But he was 13 of 24 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3. I just find myself wondering, given the fact that Ja is coming back from injury, I don't know if he's 100%. He certainly doesn't look 100%, but maybe he's also dealing with coming back from the injury. Right now, is Jaren Jackson Jr. their best player?
Statistically and availability.
The best ability is availability.
Yeah, I would say he is, just because what we say, Ja, the most talented player.
Yes. I don't.
What we say, Jaren on a lot of teams in the NBA, would he be the? Yes. What we say, of course, guards, you have an advantage. But I don't think Jaren has missed any or really less games this year. So right now, he is the biggest reason for the team's success.
Yeah, I think the Grizzlies, I want to say he's missed 3, and I think all were like scheduled misses, like rest.
Okay.
So like he's not missed any time, and I think that's kind of a huge part of it. But I also think, like, Harrington had this note this morning. If you're just doing averages per game, he's like 22nd in the NBA in scoring. But if you were to do it, because he plays fewer minutes because of the way that the Grizzlies deploy their players, he would be top 5 in scoring if he did per 48. And I think that this is what actually has surprised me the most. I knew, obviously, he had the ability to be a really good scorer, but I do think last year when he had to, with all the injuries and basically they had to run the offense through him, I do think that's taken the offensive side of his game to a whole new level.
No, I agree with that. When you said 34 minutes, that even was shocking. I'm like, most first options and superstars play at least 10 minutes more than that. Yep. At least 7 or 8 more.
Especially in that kind of game.
Yeah, so 34. Yeah, I would say last year, even though we was losing, that could have been his growing pain.
Yep.
And that could have gave him one thing in life and in sports that you can't replicate. That's why Alabama and Georgia are mad now. People want to go play. You can't replicate experience and game time experience and touches and stuff like that. So although they was on the losing end, I believe that was really helpful and big time for his game and growth.
All right, let's put Lamar Jackson. Here was what was noteworthy about Saturday to me and the Ravens. That's what we've been screaming for. Like, I'm telling you, I don't know if they'll ever admit it. I still don't know based on RPO. You never know how much is decision-making versus how much is game plan, strategy, play calling. What the Ravens displayed on Saturday, that's the form of the Ravens where you go, oh my gosh. Because what we have been seeing is they get into the playoffs and it's almost like they want to prove, you think Lamar can't win this game from the pocket? Well, we're going to show you. And then you wind up just completely limiting yourself, because when they do what they do offensively, which is Lamar running on the zone read, and you had Henry going off, and you watched a defense that is, by all objective measures, it's certainly the most expensive defense in the NFL, But Pittsburgh supposed to have a good defense. Although I don't know how good they've been the last month, but regardless, supposed to be a good defense. They were helpless. And you have a 14-play drive with no passes. Like that version of the Ravens, that's where I will meet everyone and going, yes, if you want to tell me that that is unstoppable, I'm all here for that conversation. But when it's Lamar trying to throw 40 times from the pocket, it's like I've not seen that's sustainable. But what they did on Saturday makes you go like, maybe they're the best team left.
I mean, some good teams left, but they're definitely in the conversation. And I'm a huge Lamar Jackson fan. I know it may hurt Josh Allen fan. I think he should win, you know, MVP again this year. Just even if he took a year that last year, whenever he didn't deserve to win this year, he definitely. But with that all being said, man, people are going to get mad at me for this. I need to see one more week from him, Jeff.
Well, I mean, this is a big because I do think people forget last year they dismantled as they were the one seed, so they didn't play division or wild card weekend presented by Verizon. Thanks be to the commissioner. The Texans whipped up on the Browns, and the Texans came into Baltimore, and everyone's thinking like, oh man, the Texans, and they absolutely dismantled them. But then they got the Chiefs the next week, and they looked incompetent on offense.
And who they got this week?
This week, how could you not be fired up? It's Bills and it is Ravens.
Oh, that's for sure. So hey, it's winner take MVP. I'm on that type of time.
They've already voted.
Yeah, I know, regular season.
It almost does feel like winners should take MVP.
Winners should take MVP. Yeah, and so I want to see one more game from because I'm gonna be real. As much as I love Mike Tomlin and that group, I feel like the last 3 weeks, if it weren't for them starting the season so good, I did not think the Steelers was a playoff team and a great team the way they have been performing the last, like, 3, 4, 5 weeks. So I feel like they practically was in the playoffs, but kind of, like, coming in, hobbling in almost. Like
they definitely felt like they were limping into the playoffs. Completely agree.
You see what I mean? So with that being said, it wasn't a surprise. So I don't want to take any credit. I don't want to sound like I'm taking credit from Lamar, but it's almost like one of them things where, like, this is the week. This is the week. Like, you do that against the Bills. I'm here next, well, I think we off next Monday, but I'm here whatever Monday. I work again and giving him all praise. But I think he got to do it against another strong team, and it need to be this year against either the Bills or the Chiefs, and the Bills are up.
I think you're right because the other thing that you realize, this is the other thing that, like, stands out, and we know this because, like, it has been a trend. This wasn't like this year was an outlier. But it makes you really realize, like, there's not that many really good teams.
Mm-mm.
Like, we knew the Bills were good. They dismantled the Broncos 31-7. And that game was a little uncomfortable in the first half, but the Bills were dominating it. They just didn't finish really in the red zone. But, like, when you just talk about, like, the Broncos never had the football. Like, to me, like, that's always a pretty good indicator if you're getting dominated. Like, it feels like you blink and they're already punting again. So they never had the football. I think the one thing I would say the difference because the Ravens played the Steelers was that, I can't remember if that was Christmas or maybe it was the week before Christmas, and the final score was similar to this game, but they played out entirely differently because the Ravens from the word go on Saturday just ran it right down their throat and left no doubt. And like even though the game got within like 14 points, you still felt like every time the Ravens had to go score, they were going to be able to do it. But I think that's firmly where we should be. It's like, all right, now we get Bills, Ravens. Ravens dominated this matchup in the regular season. The game is in Baltimore. Now we're flipping to Buffalo, and Buffalo's a little bit healthier. But I don't know. To me, like that's like just one of those games that I just cannot wait to watch.
No, I can't either. And I also want to go on, also say this on air, Jeffrey. The more you talk is bringing up more memories. If we had the I don't know how you would do it, but if I had to do a rankings order of every playoff team, just my own rankings, before the playoffs started a week ago, I would have had the Steelers as the weakest team. That would have been my last. I even would have had the Broncos a field goal ahead of them because I feel like their quarterback was playing with more momentum. And also, even the Chargers, the way they played, that was uncharacteristic of how they played the whole year. Harbaugh had Herbert under control for this whole year or whatever. He might have had a game or two. But if I had the rank going into it, who lost the most games in a row? I think the Steelers had lost like four straight games or one out of five or something like that. Nobody else, I think, entered the playoffs like that without trying to rest players or something. You know, they were fully trying to fight it out. And so I would have ranked them the worst team. And with that being said, I need to see him against the Bills this week.
Yeah, they lost their last four, but also they had to play week 7. So they played the Bengals week 18 or whatever, the last game of the season, week 18. And that was included in that. But they were trying. But like to your point, they lose by 2 touchdowns to the Eagles. They lose by 17 to the Ravens. They lost by 19 in the Christmas Day game where they played the Chiefs. Like that game was a 19-point game and it should have been worse. And then honestly, they lose by 2 to the Bengals, but like that was the Bengals not finishing in the red zone. Like they got beaten. I think that's probably fair. In the AFC, I probably would have ranked them last. I'm trying to think in the NFC what I would have done. I was really low on the Packers. But I think, though, if you asked me to say who would I – if the NFC and AFC are not playing that early, but I think you're right. I think I would have ranked the Packers ahead of the Steelers. I think they were 14th of 14.
Yeah, I would have probably – if you say they had to play today, right? Like yeah. They just play all
– Correct.
I think the Packers and Tampa Bay would beat – and Washington, the way the Steelers have been playing, would beat them.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. And I think that's kind of the interesting part where it's like, okay, do we just dismiss what we've seen? Because like in the NFL during the regular season, you probably would be wise. Like, all right, when you're going up against an inferior opponent, you beat the crap out of them. You don't sit there and go like, that's a meaningless performance. But if you're looking at how it will impact the next week, you can't really think like that. I think really the biggest question is if the way that the Ravens ran the ball on the Bills in whatever week 3 or 4 were. I mean, they just like remember it was like Derrick Henry had like the 95-yard run to start, and it was just over. Now the Bills are a little bit healthier than they were that week, but if the Bills can't figure out a way to stop the run, like I think we're just headed towards Chiefs and Ravens.
And if that's the case, so let me say this: even though the opponent was less talented than them with the Steelers, I do give the team props.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just saying, I don't think it helped Lamar Jackson playoff legacy.
No, I think
this week right here, no matter how it go, they couldn't stop it early on. If you go to Buffalo and do it and go to the AFC, I think now he takes a big, you know, a monkey off his back. Not the ultimate one you go get when you win the Super Bowl, but he takes a...
This is the type of playoff win he doesn't have.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I mean, to me, it's like Josh has had... I think that's the key difference for me. It's like, while Josh has not gotten to the Super Bowl, both have been to the AFC Championship game, but most of the times the Bills have lost, it really hasn't been Josh's fault, whereas there's a lot of times you can point to Lamar. It's been Lamar's fault. This would be the type of win where you can sit there and go, all right, for everyone that wants to say Allen is ahead of Lamar, well, show your work, because there's nothing like... They've now played twice in the playoffs. They've split 1-1. I think that's a big part of it. All right, the NFC. You just made the list. Does the NFC stink?
Well, I think if you're talking about the playoff teams just left.
All right, so here would be my case. We all are in agreement. Lions are good and the Eagles are good.
For sure.
I think Jaden Daniels is good. I'm still not ready to say the Commanders are good. I suppose tonight, the winner of tonight with either the Rams or the Vikings, they could throw their hat into the ring. But this is kind of what I was thinking. It's like the Vikings being 14-3, I think that might say more about the rest of the NFC where, man, there's a lot of dog crap. Because even when you were just watching the NFC games, even if they were quasi-competitive, you felt like you were watching like a different sport from the AFC. Like the good AFC teams... Like, even the Eagles, who I do think are a true contender, they're still clunky on offense. And Jalen didn't play the last 2 weeks, and he's coming back from concussion. Like, you have excuses, and the Packers have a decent defense. But, man, I just feel like the level of play in the NFC, it's like, man, we really miss the Niners being good.
You know I miss the Niners being good. Yeah, I think you're right. I'm one of those, from looking at games this year, Jeffrey, I know this sounds crazy because I think it's like under getting what is deserves viewership or is talked about, like you said, under talked about. I should say the right way. I think Minnesota is good. I really think like we're not giving them proper respect. We're not giving them their proper just due because week in and week out, I had to go watch them a couple weeks. I'm like, they really don't do this, they don't do that. Quarterback, they're pretty disciplined. I'm not saying they have the highest ceiling. You know what I think
the problem with the Vikings is? We cannot come to grips with Sam Darnold.
That's what it really
because
is.
Because I honestly, like, if Sam Darnold had a different name and just wore 14 and didn't look like Sam Darnold, I think we would, even with the bad Detroit performance. But there's just something about we've seen Darnold, and yes, he's been at dysfunctional franchises, and they've done poorly by him. But I really think that's kind of what the hang-up is, because this is the other thing that stands out when you watch the playoffs. It's like, there's really like five good quarterbacks, and everyone else is like talking themselves into whatever they've got. And this has always been my deal about Herbert. It's like, do I think Herbert is good? Yes. Do I think Herbert, you should stop traffic and stop everything you're doing and watch him play football? No. But we also see the difference. It's like, all right, it's Mahomes, it's Allen, it's Lamar, it's Burrow who's not here. And then, like, I'm open to the idea that Daniels is, like, on this ascendancy. Because the thing that stood out, and I don't know if this is a Bucs thing. Level of competition matters. Because we're going to find out quickly, although the Lions defense, I don't know if that presents much of a chance. The fact that when Jalen was on the field, and if you really needed a stop, you didn't feel like you could get it, that is something I always file away. Like, when a guy is just able to consistently stay on the field, that's a huge deal because they were coming after him with everything. They were blitzing. Sometimes they'd drop back and play coverage. It didn't matter what they did. He was able to figure it out. And so maybe Daniels is on that ascendancy, but it's still year one. Beyond that, it's just like, I don't know. I mean, Stroud had a great rookie season. He was mediocre at best this year, but he went up against Herbert one-on-one, and it was unquestionably who the better player was. Like, so I think that's just kind of the other thing about the NFL is we always want to talk ourselves into, oh, these guys. Like, yeah, maybe it's just because we're bored because it's Mahomes, it's Allen, it's Burrow, it's Lamar, and they all play each other. They're all in the one league.
Yeah, they're one. Then you got Hurts and some guy. No, man, and the way that defensive coordinator from the Vikings, he has
Brian really, Flores.
He been lighting it up. Like you say earlier when we was talking about guys who just know they're good offensive coordinator, he know he's a good defensive coordinator.
Absolutely.
And probably deserve another shot at it. AFC is clearly better, but I do think the NFC do. Put it like this, the two teams that have a chance to making it to the Super Bowl, I think they both will compete well with whoever win it, and that's the Eagles and the Lions. I think they both make it a competitive Super Bowl.
Because the other thing about the Eagles is, even when they're clunky on offense, they don't give you many opportunities.
Yes, sir.
And even if Hurts isn't throwing the ball great, and he was not yesterday, he started out as like, that was the other thing that was stood out. Quarterbacks that come out with the first script, like the stuff they've practiced all week, and like they light it up. Like Herbert had this too. It's like, I think he was like 7 of 8 to start. Hurts, I think, hit his first 7 passes. And then it's like once they get through the script and the defenses adjust, and then they go like 20 minutes of real time without completing a pass. Like that's kind of what stands out. The difference though is with Hurts, he still gives you the element of the way that they're able to run the football. Even if he's not throwing the ball that great, you don't have the ball. And I don't know, Love was really, like, I think Jordan Love needs to thank God for Herbert, because I feel like Herbert was going to suck up all the oxygen of bad play, but Jordan Love was so bad yesterday.
No, he was, and I don't know if you remember the beginning of the year, I was not trying to put him, which I do think he could because of the competition is so low and the talent level is, I ain't going to say so low, I'm going to say lower than it usually be. You know, it was a time where you could name 15 good NFL quarterbacks, 18 good.
Yeah.
So right now, what it's like, I think, man, you had a tough time.
No, it was like we did a top 10, and I felt like once we got past the first five, it's like, I don't know.
We were struggling.
Yeah, it's like you make your pick, I'll make my pick.
And so Love was like between, I think he might have 8 on your list and 10 on mine. But long story short, it was like, okay, we still was really struggling. Well, we knew he was really good. We knew because of where the NFL market was, he was finna get this big deal. But we still wasn't like, do we need to see a little more before we just throw him into the top five or this or that? So I think he kind of did what, like you say, thank God for her, because I don't think it could get no worse. Because somebody was like, ain't nobody did that in 2 years, or he hadn't did that since 2018. I'm like, I think it is some quarterbacks that went their whole career not having 4 interceptions, maybe nothing but a couple of times outside of a 15 or 12 or 10-year career, I believe. Like,
Herbert becomes the first quarterback in NFL history to throw more picks in a playoff game than he threw all season. 4-3.
So he only threw 3 picks.
He threw 3 picks this year.
See, I knew that game was uncharacteristic because I know how Harbaugh did. I just think that game got the best of them because Harbaugh been having them disciplined. Not just him, that team has been playing with really good discipline most of the year.
Mistake-free. And like, but that's kind of the whole point. This has always been my deal with Herbert. If you just watch Red Zone, you're convinced he's like a top 5 player that you maybe have ever seen. Because he will have highlight plays that make you go, oh my God. But when you watch him throughout the course of a game, he throws everything 90 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Like, I always laugh when these receivers, they lead the league in drops. Yeah, no duh. He throws everything as hard as he can. Like, of course they lead the league in drops. Like, it's 95 mile an hour fastballs every single time. But when it comes to, like, just stacking drives together, like stuff that works in the playoff. This is why I think Burrow's so good in the playoffs. It's just kind of like sometimes he'll make like that 7-yard completion that just keeps the drive moving. With Herbert, it's like it's all or nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the reason why it's like even with Hurts not throwing the ball great, you still have to worry about him running the football and keeping drives alive. And like that's kind of what stands out. It's like there are just so few guys that can really, when defenses are cranked up to 11, there's so few guys that can consistently move the ball.
Let me ask you this about Harbaugh, right? Because, like, you know, he was with the Niners. He was one of my favorite coaches. Do you think, though, as disciplined he had the team and as good as he had Justin Herbert playing this year, do you think he maybe took it too far, not letting him off the leash that when it came down to, like, a game he had to, he wasn't – because for Justin Herbert's standards – even though we know he needs to calm down. So he had him pretty under control for a guy with that much talent.
So I think my answer to that would be I don't think they expected to be in the playoffs. I think they were trying to use this year to build culture and build the identity of what they were going to be, which was not play, you know, play mistake-free football. And like they were going from taking Herbert, running an offense that everything's on him, to getting him a run game, getting a defense, don't make any mistakes. We're going to win that way. And I think they were trying to use this year as a building opportunity. But then we ran into this reality in the NFL this year where we had a bunch of teams that really, truly sucked. Mm-hmm. And so that allowed like 8-win teams to get to 10-win, 11-win teams. And so that kind of elevated a bunch of people. And so I do think in the end it was probably a mistake because they got into a playoff game where all of a sudden it was like having to revert back to, all right, we got to put it all on Herbert, and they were uncomfortable. I still think they're at their best. Like, I would still go back to, I wouldn't take the governor off. Like, that's kind of the other thing about the playoffs. Like, nobody stinks anymore. And so every team you're going up against is good, and every mistake gets magnified. And I still think their best chance of winning is playing ball control and, like, just, like, in the end, like, Herbert made the game a blowout, but they were still getting beat. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that whole game, I feel like, flipped on the bad snap over CJ's head. CJ goes and scrambles. Didn't really have time to, like, he just kind of, like, had to react and just be an athlete. And then he fires the pass that keeps the drive going. And then they finally, like, had one good drive. And then it was almost like the Chargers didn't it was almost like the Chargers were trying to win the game 6-0. And both teams were playing so bad on offense that you thought maybe, like, this is where it was headed. But it was like once the Texans got that drive going, Well, then all of a sudden, like, the game plan went out the window, and then they were just having to try to throw the ball over the place, and it's like, he had a bad day. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about tonight's game. Let's talk about those Vikings and what we expect tonight. We'll do that and more when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM. All right, Herd, we got one more playoff game before we are officially set for divisional weekend. We got the Vikings and Rams tonight. Game was originally scheduled to be played in L.A. It has been moved to Glendale. So we're outside where the Cardinals play. They do have the Rams logo. There's a nice feature on ESPN about them painting the field for the Rams. How would you feel about the Rams are a division opponent for you? How would you feel about your owner breaking out, you know, all the stops, paying for everything to host a divisional rival in your stadium?
So from a competitor and a player and a coach and a petty competitor, I would not like it. But for, I actually think it's great gratitude and for doing it with everything that's going on with the fires, then for him being able to just – because I think he's doing it because of the great tragedy.
There's also a PR element, yeah.
Yeah. So with that PR element, guys like me and most people in America are showing them major respect and gratitude for doing it and integrity for doing it. I think it's, even if you're just doing it for PR, I think it's a kind of a big deal.
All right, so these two teams played on Thursday Night Football this year. I remember I was calling an MUS game that night. This was the game that Sam Darnold had the no call on the face mask on Thursday Night Football. The Rams ended up winning. The Rams had been, I think, before week 18, I think they'd won 6 of 7. The Vikings obviously finishing at 14-3. I'm getting the sense you like the Vikings tonight.
Yeah, I do, because the way the divisions work, I knew that they would get home field. But I felt like the Vikings were a better team.
It's kind of like, honestly, you can make the case it's what we saw last night, where the 12 win Commanders were on the road, but the Bucs were 10-7. They had like a couple of nice wins, but it's like they had some really bad losses too.
I thought them teams were a little bit more even though,
yeah,
than this. And when they said they had to move fields, I don't know why. I automatically thought that they would probably went to Vegas when if they had to leave Cali. But I guess it's like, I think LA is the same distance.
Yeah, it's about they're Vegas about 5 hours drive either way.
Both of them, yeah. I like the Vikings, Jeffrey. I like the Vikings in this situation due to their – I think the Raiders is – I mean, not the Raiders, but the Rams are just one of those teams that with a good coaching and their quarterback playing good, they always figure out a way. But it's like every year it's like – some years they just go make the playoffs and some years they ain't. You know, you never
– they don't feel like – it's weird – if you tell me one of these teams is a threat to win the to make the Super Bowl, I agree with you. It feels like it's the Vikings. But there's just something weird about this game where it's like O'Connell was on McVay's staff. Like, I felt like O'Connell made the mistake in the Detroit game of like trying to coach like Dan Campbell would be. It was like fight fire with fire, so just go for it. It's like maybe take some field goals, man. Like maybe get some points on the board, but I don't know, like, this is just one of those things where it's like, it feels like, okay, you tell me those two teams play twice this year, they're going to split, therefore they'd win tonight. But there's something about Stafford having playoff experience and wondering whether or not, like, if pressure comes to Sam Darnold again, what does he look like? Because that's the other thing. While the Lions torched him with the blitz, he'd been very good against the blitz all year. And I do kind of find myself thinking, like, is Justin Jefferson really going to be contained twice in a row?
That's a bad man. So I agree with that's a bad man. So I definitely agree with you on that. But you know what? I do think this is going to be a good game. It's a game that's worth watching. I think it will be an exciting game. So out of all the wild card games they had this year, I'm glad that they only pick that one or maybe the Commanders game, because any other game I wouldn't want to see Monday night.
Those were tough watches. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Herd, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, we got to go to Rex Ryan yesterday on Sunday NFL Countdown. When discussing the Mike Vrabel news that he was indeed expected to become the Patriots' next head coach, hopefully I get to kick this guy's ass twice a year. My team, not me personally. So I don't know how much you've been keeping up. Rex has been publicly courting the Jets job. Like, he's been, like, trying to, like, make it known he wants the Jets job. Connor Hughes, who covers the Jets, just said on the WFAN, the Fan, the big radio station in New York, Rex Ryan, I heard, is completely out. That's not going to happen with the Jets.
I thought they said he got interviewed. I must
He did to get an interview, but I think they interviewed half of the NFL.
Okay.
Yeah, that's been how that's gone. All right, my man, it's good to have you back in here.
Thank you.
That, of course, is Coach Hurd. If you missed anything, we'll be up on the podcast show after the program ends. For Dennis, for Coach, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.